Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
All right. Hello.
We're back. I'd like to say you've just, I'd like to say you've just listened to the new and improved Peak Speak soundtrack, but we're yet to get there. You still need to figure out a melody for us, and then I'll write a sick bass line.
I need to, send me the instructions again. I need to find a printer cable. I think my piano will connect to my computer through a printer cable. I know for a fact it's probably got the capabilities to do it. I've just never done it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's almost certainly it will do something like that, and then you'll be sweet.
You can change the sound once you've got it, right?
Well, it depends on what you're using to record it. So I've got a MIDI keyboard, and I'm actually probably going to bring my little MIDI keyboard with me to Nationals anyway. So, because that's the kind of fuckwit I am. So I've now got a 25 key and a 49 key MIDI controller. So mine both have drum pads and stuff like that. And because I do it through Ableton, you can then use it to control basically any sound you want, which has been a really fun rabbit hole. Remaking sounds in synths and stuff is super cool.
I can't remember where it was, but I went into a synth museum and it was really cool.
Oh yeah, really, dude, that'd be cool. Fucking crazy.
Or if you go down, anyone who's like me and parents wouldn't let him have a new console, and I had to play consoles from much before my age. Okay,
you lived such a deprived childhood, walking uphill to school both ways through the snow.
Exactly, therefore. Playing Sega Mega Drive when Xbox 360 was out. Go look into them recording soundtracks for
some
of the games, because some of the game soundtracks are insane. Musical talent level, wild for just the backing track of a Sega game.
I was watching a guy on YouTube called Red Means Recording, and he does these sick YouTube videos that's a top-down view of a synth unit, and it's it's this big, and he does text captions over the top of it, but then he builds a whole song. So you see him program drum beats and then get a bass line and build the whole thing while he's telling this beautiful story about whatever he's talking about with the text captions. But just the way you can take this tiny little box that is nothing more than a couple of oscillators that produce different shaped sound waves and then create an entire song from it is fucking insane. It's a fun but deep rabbit hole to go down.
I'd love to know. So I don't know if you ever – did you ever play Age of Empires?
Did I ever play Age of Empires? Okay, fuck good. You for even asking that good. As a question.
Remember it came in Kellogg cereal for a while? It came with so
yes.
Age of Empires 2 came in, but there was four. There was four different games, and one of them was literally just a music production thing that you just played around with. I'd be really curious to know how many famous DJs or famous musicians
were born from just
making tunes out of this little Kellogg's computer program.
Yeah, man. It's a friend of mine who's also into music, but obviously further along than I am, described it to me the other day as he was like, "Welcome to the never-ending video game." And I was like, fuck, that is such a good description for it, because, man, I could spend 40 minutes just scrolling through different kick drums until I find the one that I want. It's it's a deep and dark rabbit hole.
Well,
lots of fun, though.
Speaking of music, I just went to... just got back from the USA. I went there, turned it into a trip. Meg came with me, and we traveled around quite a bit. The purpose of it was to go to Miami with Lily for the Ghost Clash. But the reason this segues with music is because Kevy B from Thy Art Is Murder, he's a powerlifter in Brisbane. He was there. So it was cool talking music shop with him. I'm always fascinated because our videographer here, Geordie, outside of Zero Work, he's exclusively in the music industry. And I'm always curious to... see the behind the scenes of how it all actually works. So that was really interesting. In USA, we went and visited Ryan and Brian out of Team GPT in Connecticut. they're fans of the show. They found us. They found Amazing. Me through the show, so they know us. They were so connected cool. by another guy. Please forgive me if I get your name wrong. I get the feeling it was Dave. All I know is that he had an immaculate beard and he was jacked, so that's more of a compliment than remembering your name anyway.
I completely agree.
So it was cool. We were actually meant to be driving an hour and a half south, but we drove 2 hours north just to go visit these guys and hang out at their gym.
Sick.
And then headed 3 hours south after that. So it was cool to go see a gym and connect with people over the world that have found the love of lifting and connected through us as well.
Yeah, man, it still fucking blows my mind occasionally that that's the thing that happens. Like, someone on the other side of the world knows what my voice sounds like. Mm. It just weirds me out in a way that I can't describe.
That's why we keep going. Even though we're terrible at it, we still keep going.
Yeah, well, that's the trick, Thomas, is I don't know about you, but I've learned by this stage of my life that I have been both, let's say, blessed and cursed with the gene that tells me I can probably be pretty good at almost anything if I try hard enough, which is, as I say, both a blessing and a curse. And if you just keep doing it for long enough, eventually you just outlast everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah.
RIP weekly weights.
The problem is you never go hard enough at one thing to get really good at anything.
No, exactly.
We just get kind of okay at everything and then give up because we're not good enough at it and move on to the next.
Yeah. I said it in an Instagram caption a little while ago where I was like, I've realized in my mid-30s that my lot in life from a physical training standpoint is to be just good enough at a whole variety of things to surprise the average onlooker when they judge me based exclusively on what I look like. and being like just good enough to outrun the occasional person who thinks they can outrun me and those sort of things. I'm okay with it. Like, just be a little bit above average at lots of different things and you're actually pretty good.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Something insightful. Can't remember.
Oh, certainly. I've never heard you say anything that isn't.
Oh, no. What I was going to say. So I'm going to the UK on Wednesday. And when I come back, we're going to commit once a week. We're going to lock in a time slot like the olden days. And we're going to do it. We're going to bring this back.
This is a huge call from you, the sole reason we don't record every week.
Shut up. I'm not going away after this for a while, besides a couple of times. And a couple more times that'll probably pop up.
Yeah,
for the most part.
It's all right. You don't at all have like lots of things to do in your life and you're not incredibly busy. It's fine.
No, for the most part, I'm going to be stable after next 2 weeks.
Yeah. Lots of people often describe you, Thomas Lilly, as entirely stable.
I need to be here. My dog's sad.
Yeah, that's fair enough. My brother picked up a new greyhound on the weekend, Mabel. She's adorable. Mabel. Although she's a bit freaked out by children, as it turns out. But that's because she's a like 2 or 3 year old racing greyhound who's probably never seen a child in her life.
It's like, why is this thing I'm supposed to chase and kill so close to me?
Yeah, basically. So as long as we manage that, it'll be okay.
Nice. So, science.
Science, bitch. About. Indeed. Let's talk about it.
I don't know. I've been thinking a bit about, like, you know, as we get more and more about information from Instagram, as we get better at understanding science.
Why the fuck are we doing science anyway?
In general.
Fuck them all. Let's just all be Instagram influencers.
There's, I don't know, when it kind of shifted for us from like the meathead age to the nerd age.
Yeah.
The nerds didn't have much to cling on to because there wasn't a lot of great science about this stuff, and I feel like
weren't as strong as all the meatheads. That was the kicker, right?
I feel like it's getting better, and I also feel like there are some strong and massive science nerds now. Absolutely. And it's making it even harder for the average coach and average punter, not only because there's an enormous amount more people trying to divulge information, which makes it seem like what's right and what's wrong. There's a little bit more credibility behind it as well. And I don't know. I'm always stunned by how catty the science world seems. Is like, this is right, therefore everything else is wrong. You have to rethink everything. Like, just think of the things that grab you or grab people on Instagram. It's like, you've been doing lat pulldowns wrong your entire life by a guy with smaller lats than you. Like, you know what I mean? I don't know. I guess I want to talk about how does the average person reconcile from all the scientific nonsense that they see on Instagram and real life?
So I think one of the interesting points to start on this is actually one that I'd completely forgotten about until just now. I'm now going to have a hard time remembering the guys' names, but there's they're like friends with Sam Altman. Who's the free will is not a thing, Sam, who has a podcast?
Harris?
Yeah, Sam Harris. Friends with him, like white intellectual dudes who went down this rabbit hole, and I'll have to find you the podcast for it. But there's this whole discussion in the at the science world about the validity of basically the entire science industry, because all of the lab rats that they do science on are basically all genetically modified at this point, because they all come from basically the same stock. And so there's this whole rabbit hole to call into question the validity of all these assumptions we're making on, you know, one genetic lineage of mice, right? And that potentially, I think a lot of it was related to cancer research and things like that.
Mm.
And potentially we're like down rabbit holes that are hard to justify because they actually are less relevant to humans. But I think that sort of leads into the point I want to make, which is the idea that a lot of this science is, I think part of it is a perception of this cattiness and the divisiveness that is perpetuated by social media and made significantly worse by shortening attention spans and all of that kind of stuff. But I think the problem that, at least from my point of view, with a lot of this evidence-based stuff is you're all relying on, or not you all, I don't want this to be a personal attack, they all are relying on this identity of evidence-based, suggesting that the only type of evidence that exists is scientific studies, right? Sure. Which is just bullshit. That's not the only type of evidence, because people like you and I combined have multiple decades of very valid objective evidence that these things work. And yeah, sure, it maybe doesn't stand up to the same scientific rigor, but the scientific rigor is also scientifically rigorous because the only people they can get to do these studies are largely untrained college students. And so is the science that you have of a 21-year-old American kid the same as the experience you have coaching a 35-year-old man who's been lifting weights for 25 years?
Mm. Yeah, even before I was a fucking nerd, it always baffled me if I read a study, and for the record, I can read a study because I did like six subjects at uni, maybe not six. It was definitely... I did three subjects at uni specifically dedicated to like reading and interpreting scientific
data. Yeah.
But when you read exercise science,
I was enrolled in some of those courses.
Yeah, look at the conclusions of them. Like you have to think logically. If they're doing something bench press on untrained individuals, the thing I always wondered is like, how do you account for technique? How do you account for technique with that? Because you cannot deny, no matter who you are, you cannot deny there is an influence on performance that comes from techniques. So unless techniques controlled for, are they controlling for that? Or are they just telling people to lie down and push the bar? And so is there inherent differences person to person based on whatever technique they decide to use? You can control for some factors, but there's like a micro thing of the macro that you have to take into account when you're looking at literature around exercise. There are so many confounding factors that may not then apply to whatever you're looking at. And when you say, you know, it might not be as rigorous as the anecdotal experience, you're very much arguing the opposite direction, right?
Yeah.
Because we've been working with trained individuals for a decade with pretty consistent technique, programming. We've got a really good sample to look at as to what works and what doesn't.
And also, for the record, all of those people paid us. Whereas in studies, you have to like incentivize those people to do it, right? This isn't people choosing to do these studies because they're like, I'm so invested in the scientific method that I want to be a part of the process, both as a scientist and as a study participant. You're standing in a college campus in the States recruiting drunk people as they walk past, right? Like what we have is not just the evidence on platforms in videos and all of that kind of shit, but we also have thriving businesses built off the idea that we get results and people pay us to get those results, which I think, again, adds an element of rigor that isn't peer review in the sense of science, but it's peer review in the sense that people keep paying us to do this shit, right?
Which is why I want to have conversations like this, because for you and I, you look at an Instagram post that says, you know, scientifically, you must bench press like this. You're just going to be like, no, wrong. I know that's not, I know that's not right. So I'm not going to change anything. Then I think of the average punter, you know, the average lifter that's just doing it on their own, or a new coach that's, you know, not 100% sure of this stuff. It's so fucking confusing, especially when, again, the modern attention grabbing thing is always clickbaity and always controversial and maybe layered with like hooks that aren't true that they correct later on, that if you don't make it to the end, you don't see that correction, you know? Crazy.
Yeah. It's the controversial headline that results in actually a fence sitting outcome.
Like, yeah.
That, yeah, I've had this discussion with a few people over the last couple of weeks where coming into the last week of the 4-week powerlifting course in the lead up to our first novice comp of the year. And I had the discussion with a couple of the people who, like, you know, still relative beginners, but have been training and invested in their own training long enough to have, they're primarily self-taught, but to be consuming this sort of stuff, right? And be exactly the type of people who could fall victim to this trap. And I've described it to them as being like, you're in this hard part of this process where you know just enough to be dangerous to yourself, right? You know just enough to be like, oh yeah, that sounds like it's a good, logical, thought out process based on this science. And then you change something without being able to understand the deeper level that comes with that. It happens both with like the training principles idea through science, but I think it happens a lot with technique. I've the same people I've had discussions with, like, hey, like, I don't like cueing muscles because when I cue muscles, you hear one thing and you think lats means this and I know that lats means that. And so I use different terms to describe those things. And a couple of them have been like, you know, like the lats in the deadlift is a classic one. I think it's one of the most horrifically overused, misunderstood cues in deadlifting and powerlifting, because so many people want to set their lats by like retracting their shoulder blades and doing all this weird shit that isn't actually your lats. And twice I've been like, here, just, you know, hold your arm like this, pull against my hand. And they're like, oh, like, yeah. So that's what your lat feels like. And they're like, cool. Mm. That's nothing like what I've been doing. It's like, yeah, because you got a cue from someone who, like us, has a pretty good understanding of where their body is in space and how it all works and how to create this tension and these ideas. But without or who then has a disconnect with the common person who doesn't have that understanding. And so they reflect language that works for them, but that doesn't translate to the average person who has almost no understanding of where their body is in space. Mm. And thus they end up overdoing the cue. And I know you do this in your coach education stuff where you like deliberately go in and be the worst client in the world who takes all of your cues to the nth degree, because that's exactly what happens.
Exactly.
And that's why I think it's so important, whether you're a scientist or a coach or both, to be in a position to, as openly and honestly as you can, lay out your ideas in a way that makes sense to both someone in the academic world who has that level of understanding, but then also someone who's never set foot in a gym before consuming a piece of Instagram content. And I think that's kind of the problem with the Instagram world is like, I can follow a bunch of science heavy pages and people like that and get what I need out of it because I have a critical thinking eye that's developed through years of experience and all that kind of stuff. But the accessibility of that information is amazing. But then if Jeffrey, who walks into the gym for the first time, is consuming the same content, they're going to take a very different slant on those things because they don't have the same filtration system.
Hmm. Yeah. 100%. I'm really glad you brought up the lats because I hate the lats so much. Yeah, so same. Much. Because people, when they talk about muscles like that, they don't think fully. So like lats on deadlift, the first question should be, what should your lats do? Stabilize the spine. Okay, that's it. Forget about it. Because you're not going to cue stabilize your spine. So stop talking about lats.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to talk about like general tightness back there, just say tightness in your back. You know, and then we can figure out cues and stuff for you from there. And God bless Michael Hamilton. Like 3 or 4 months into me owning a gym, I used to preach, have to do lat pull downs, have to do rows, big batch, big back, big bench. You have to use your lats when you bench. He's like, what do your lats do when you bench? And I'm like, well, your lats when you, fuck, what do you lads do when you bench? And I went away and I went to my old like uni anatomy physiology textbook. Yeah, I'm like, well, they connect at the front of the humerus, so they muscle. I came back with a scientific answer. I should have just been like, fuck, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. It took me a while to learn that, but it's like that question made me start to ask myself those questions very early on. 100%. Yeah. But to your second point there about like Jeffrey or the name you used, like
I think it was Jeffrey.
I think for me, if anyone from now on says like, who should I follow to get information from? I'm going to say Sam Sulek. Fucking God bless Sam Sulek, because he's the perfect blend of what people need in terms of just fucking get after it, train hard, push.
Take heaps of gear.
Forget the gear part. We'll talk about it later. train hard, get fucking after it. But there's still a nice blend of like some of the emerging scientific principles, like, you know, pushing too hard, really hard sets instead of going like 10 by 10, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think there's a really nice blend of influence there that's going to be better than being at either end of the extreme. Like both you and I have been at. Like we've both been way too meathead and way too nerd. And reality is it comes full circle eventually and we're like, oh, cool, nerd and meathead together are really fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing that I keep coming back to with so much of this science stuff is often I find the people who are preaching about it from an evidence-based standpoint are like, and this is exclusively from my perspective, they're internet coaches, right? They're people who make content for a living. When you talk to average people who have either been lifting for a little while or have never really lifted or, you know, are in that first couple of years of experience, you just got so many stories that you have to unpack and, you know, demystify already. Like there are just so many things that are far more important in that process, at least from my point of view, before you get to what's scientifically optimal.
Like what?
If you can't make it to the gym 3 days a week consistently, no one gives a fuck what direction your lats are moving when you do pull down. Like, or how many milligrams of caffeine you have in the lead up, or how consistently you load your creatine, or even what you eat. Like, so much of this shit is just completely irrelevant to the average punter. Because the average punter's barrier is really fucking low.
Yeah.
And they need to focus on that end. And I think this is where potentially the difference in our audiences comes to light, in that I feel like increasingly I get a broader range of people who are not just I want to be powerlifters, which I love and I really enjoy, because for me they're often the people that I can connect the best with, because it is this like, hey, what do you want to be able to do? It's this self-discovery journey, not just like, I'd be really fucking good at powerlifting, which is great. And I like that too. It's fun. I'm excited to take my biggest nationals team to Queensland in a couple of months for years. Like it's going to be great. But the conversations I have with those sort of people are far more about like, did you remember to eat some protein today? And did you go to bed at a reasonable time yesterday? And are you aware that your 12-hour workdays mean training really hard probably isn't the right answer for you right now? And those sort of things that are just far more important conversations than all of the science bullshit that is great and I love, but just is less important than I think most people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or most people want it to be.
And even for that other audience, I think the risk, or the biggest risk, is that if you go too hard down any sort of optimal mindset train of thought, you end up discounting a lot of the intangibles about training. Like if you're going for a purely by the book approach to training. And I mean, like this is even weird for me to say, because it's not something that I talk about that often, but just things like, just have fun. Like,
Do you want
to do 8 sets of biceps in one thing of one exercise? Go do it. Who cares? Have fun. Like, does it keep bringing you back? And for the intermediate, I mean, like, that's where they drop off because they stop having fun.
Yep.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
Man, I was going to make exactly that point. I've over the last couple of years spent some time writing out coaching principles, right? That's the sort of thing that for a long time people were like, that you need coaching principles, and I just couldn't articulate the principles. I knew them and I knew what they were. I just couldn't articulate them in a way that made sense. My two most important ones these days are coach humans, not machines. And if it's fun, if they enjoy it, they'll work hard.
Hmm.
And if you can tick those two boxes, you're actually going to get like 95% of the way, because everything else will just kind of unfold, right? Mm-hmm. So the discussions I have with people these days are far less about like, this is what training is, and far more, what do you want to do? And let me reverse engineer a process that allows you to do that, right? Because yeah. like for me, that's they're the intellectually enjoyable conversations without wanting to sound like a complete fuckwit. Powerlifting's not that hard. Like it is a relatively predictable and straightforward sport. It is largely measurable and manageable. Once you've got a pretty solid, consistent system, it doesn't need a lot of consistent tweaking to be good. It is then more people management than anything else. The stuff I enjoy from a coaching standpoint these days intellectually is I want to be able to run this, ride this, and lift that, and I've got this amount of time to do it in, but also my life is crazy. Cool. How do we make this work in a way that is manageable for you in the long term? That shit excites me, and I really enjoy the challenge of that, because actually that process is so much about like what is the least amount of work we can do in all of these ways to be able to continue to make progress and make it effective. Like how hard can you work with 30 minutes a day or whatever it is that make it really fun to explore that? And they're the conversations that I have that I get excited about. And then hopefully the person I'm talking to also gets excited about the prospect of, hey, like question your own biases. What can you do? Like, what do you want to be able to do? My coaching is way more, I would call it optimistic than it has been in the past, in that I prefer to default to what can you do, not what can't you do. Mm. What do you want to do and how do we get you there, not what can't you do or what's not a thing. You know, like look at all the what can we do and we'll work around the rest of it.
Mm. It's interesting. It's a completely different set of challenges.
Absolutely.
I feel like my challenges these days with elite powerlifters is more like, what have you learned along the way that we need to rewire? And yeah. because you are so good at what you do, what strategies do I need to use to get you to trust me to rewire yeah. those things? Because like I can't argue with the fact that you're a million times stronger than me, but I can show you that I can get you even stronger. And yeah, it's just a different set of challenges, I suppose. I'm making an assumption here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that since you've been getting into, you know, in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, the endurance side of things, that you're exposed to that world a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do these same sort of issues exist in that world? Are people like hyper scientific yeah. About that stuff to the point of dogma? If anything,
it's almost like the opposite in some ways, and like in some ways exactly the same. But I feel like there are areas, at least from my perspective, that are like still antiquated in a way that powerlifting was maybe 10 years ago.
Okay.
Because things like running and cycling have such deep-seated like dogmatic histories. Sure. There are lots of camps that I feel like were encamped long before the science era. And so there's still a lot of that. Like, man, I had a conversation with a person about the coach that they were talking to, who is the expert in the thing they want to be good at. And I'm deliberately being vague here because I don't want this to be a personal attack.
Of course.
But this person's engaging a coach to get better at their area and then engaging me to teach them more about lifting weights and training in that respect. And they showed the one session I've given this person, like it's not a program, it's one session, to this other coach. And they were like, oh, it seems like they know what they're doing. And then had some suggestions. And like the fucking rejection sensitive dysphoria / real recalcitrant child in me immediately gets my hackles up in that situation for a variety of, I think, perfectly valid reasons. First and foremost, I didn't make any questions to their capacity to program for that aspect of their training. Yeah, exactly. I would never make suggestions on that front because I'm not that coach. In the same way that like your dietitian gives you I'm not going to make suggestions about that. I'm not a fucking nutritionist, dietitian, whatever you want to call it, whichever degree you've got. And so that offends me, first and foremost, that you've come into this from a I know more than you scenario. This person was like, oh, there's some things they don't understand about the elite end of this other area. I was like, for a start, you might be elite at that other area, but you're a fucking beginner in my world.
Right? Yeah.
Like, elite, nothing. You have done barely any of this area of training in your life. You're a beginner. the elite shit doesn't matter, in the same way that the science shit doesn't matter if you've never consistently trained for more than 3 weeks at a time, right? Like, it's the same argument, it's the same discussion, just in a different frame, really.
Yeah, interesting. I thought you might say the thing about, like, because I imagined that there's, like, the old guard of coaches that have been the running coach for 50 years, and you don't touch that. You don't speak against that.
All of those people, because they're really fit, are going to live for a long time. At least all the old powerlifting coaches are going to die.
They'll die. Right? Like,
that era just dies out quicker. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that definitely plays a role. Increasingly, there's a lot of science. The Norwegians, who are currently, like, chasing Olympic triathlon gold and a bunch of other crazy endurance shit like that, they're renowned for a super scientific approach. They're, like, measuring lactate multiple times a session, like, all of that super extensive lab testing stuff regularly, tracking all of those kind of values. So there's definitely that end of the spectrum as well, and their results speak for themselves, right? These Norwegians are fucking insane. Then there's also, like, you know, if you want to search a fucking badass woman, go look at the two, Courtney DeWalter and Camille something something, whose name I've forgotten. Camille just ran for 6.5 days. Like, ran, like, hundreds and hundreds of kilometers over the course of 6 days. Like, yeah, sure, there's some science that's relevant to that. But, like, at a certain point, you can't study shit where you make someone run like that nonstop for 6 days. Like, it's unethical, you know? And she was part of some science, like, Lululemon sponsored it. But then you talk to someone like Courtney DeWalter, who's also, like, an ultra marathon fucking weapon. I think last year, she won, it's like Western States, another big race in the US, and then UTMB, like, these three monster trail ultras. Won them all in the same year. And you talk to her about training, she's like this fucking long blonde basketball shorts wearing surfy chick. It's just like, I just really like running. I just, like, some days I feel good and I run hard, and some days I don't and I run slow. And like, that's basically her whole training philosophy. Doesn't really track her miles, like, any of that. It's so unscientific. And she's a fucking weapon. You know? Like,
love it.
I think in both worlds, in all of these worlds, there is always extreme examples on both ends that justify the extreme ends of the arguments.
Yeah.
But I feel like increasingly the good coaches are, like, smack in the middle. And sure, you might have a bias to one end or the other because of how you came up through the system. But I think the best coaching happens somewhere in the middle. And the more we can all talk about it like that, I think the better it's going to be.
It's a nice note to end it on.
Excellent.
Beautiful. Thanks for listening.
We're back. Sam, cue the custom PeakSpeak outro.
Nice. Nice. Goodbye.
Bye.